Hey, what's up?
Hello, is this Ben?
Hello, Ben.
Yeah, this is Michael and Steve calling from Hamburg.
Welcome to the Wild Edible World podcast. Yeah.
We got the right number, right?
Yeah, is this the right guy? Otherwise, this is going to get weirder.
Hi, Ben. This is Michael.
And Steve.
How are you guys?
Good, man. How are you doing today?
Good.
That was totally impromptu. I did not know you were going to do that, and just kind of went with it.
Man. That was a pretty good accent, actually.
Oh, thank you.
Danke.
I mean, danke. Yeah. Willkommen on this episode of the Wild Edible World podcast.
Oh my gosh, he's still doing it.
I'm your host, Michael.
And I'm Steve, I think.
I couldn't think of anything else to do, so I just did it again. I don't know.
I'm Steven.
Yeah, there we go. Anyway, we're really excited to have our guest on today. His name is Ben Grant. He's down in St. Louis.
St. Lou.
He's at Fourplex, the number four, PLEX Dining on Instagram, selling like the coolest kombuchas you'll ever freaking see, as well as like a bunch of pastries. Had a lot of work in the pastry region, or the pastry region of France.
The pastry
region. All
right,
I'm on one tonight, folks. Yeah. I'm sorry. All right, but thanks so much for joining us, Ben. We're really excited to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's good to finally get to talk to you.
Truly, yeah, it's been a minute.
For a while, and like talked about meeting up and all that stuff, so it's good to kind of connect and chat.
100%. And I am not giving up on us meeting up sometime and maybe doing like a live threesome, you know, cooking. We'll go forage and stuff. Just got to get Steve out of the house, man.
Yeah, you got to get me out of the house. Oh,
well, you're about to have a kid too, right? We're going to need to get you out of the house.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm running out of excuses. Yeah, soon it'll be me. Too true. So I guess we'll start with the easy question. Like, what's the most recent thing that you foraged?
Probably morels. I've been pretty busy with other stuff, so I haven't been able to get out as much as I'd like. But morels probably. Today I kind of have a spot I like to go where there's just like a random little patch of wisteria, and
nice.
I just chomped on a couple of those today while I was out. It was pretty rainy this morning and just kind of muddy, so it's more so just to like get outside. You know, the blackberries are starting to flower, mulberries are starting to you know, turn a little bit. Probably not another couple of weeks or so, but I'll be hitting mulberries hard for sure pretty much every year.
That's one of my favorites. Man.
Yeah.
What do you like doing with mulberries?
I mean, I'm pretty simple when it comes to it. Like, I love a good mulberry muffin with just like an oat streusel on it. Like, that's so good to me. Last year, just kind of like messing around in the kitchen, I made like a spelt tart shell with just like some fresh mulberries and some mulberries that I fermented in honey, just kind of like mixed those together for like different textures. And it had like a creme fraiche white chocolate ganache in there and just dusted it with some fig leaf powder. Damn. It was so good.
Oh, man.
I want that right now.
It's way too good. So yeah, I guess I mentioned like kombuchas earlier. Have you made like a mulberry kombucha?
Oh yeah. So I don't really do the bake sale anymore. I quit doing that like maybe November 23. I quit doing the Instagram bake sale and stuff that I was doing out of my apartment. Mm-hmm. Kind of just like, you know, kind of post COVID, just like got back into the swing of things and got back to working and quit doing that. But yeah, mulberry kombucha, pineapple and caraway seed. I've played with like a black walnut kombucha, but it really just like turned to this weird black sludge. It had like the piney flavor that black walnuts have and stuff, but I don't know, it's just kind of weird.
Not good mouth feel, huh?
No, and like on that note too, is like we have a local kombuchery here in St. Louis called Confluence Kombucha, and I've foraged stuff for them that nice. They've used. And one year I just found like a massive black staining polypore, and I'm like, man, I don't really have anything to do with this like currently, so do you want it? And I just kind of like gifted it to him. So, you know, month or so later it fermented and stuff, and I shit you not, the kombucha tasted exactly like pineapple. Whoa. It was so weird.
That's very weird.
Yeah, just super unexpected. I don't know if it was like something going on with the mushroom or what, but it was
insane. I wonder
what
kind of tea they used with that, you know?
He just uses like a
just like a
pretty standard like black tea, I believe. Huh. But
yeah. Interesting. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, he does a chanterelle mushroom kombucha every year too, which is super good.
That's our favorite.
Oh, really? Yeah. It's so good.
Favorite mushroom, probably, yeah. What's yours?
I really like black trumpets a lot.
Sure.
Yeah. More so, like, the application with those, I prefer dried. But... yeah.
So what's do you have a history, like a family history in foraging? Has your family always done this kind of thing, or are you the black sheep?
No, like kind of like you. I didn't really have any experience in it. My family was very much a like stay inside and like kind of homebody people. You know, I would go out and like outside and play as a kid when, you know, kids used to do that. but yeah, I just like got into foraging probably like 5 or 6 years ago. Kind of like what I tell people a lot is, you know, in high school and growing up, I liked to skateboard a lot with my friends and was like, a lot of times like the film rat, I was always like filming my friends, and like we had a skate team that was called Team Fiction and was kind of like our little town of Alton famous, you know, a little. And
that's awesome.
That was like right when YouTube started, so I was like editing videos and posting videos on there. But to kind of get back to like how I got into it, is like once I quit skateboarding, I kind of like was always seeking out this like way of like perceiving the world in like a different light. And like when you skateboard, you kind of look at, you know, sets of stairs and handrails and like ledges in like a different viewpoint than the average everyday person.
Yeah.
And how I like kind of viewed foraging is like the same way, like viewing the world around you in like a different light. And I don't know, that's just how I like connected those dots, really.
I think that's brilliant. I think that's a really that's a fantastic comparison, actually. I think, of course, yeah. you look at the world completely differently as a skateboarder.
Yeah
And that holds completely true to foraging. You know, I know I don't see any tree the same way. I completely perceive my surroundings differently.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And it's like, once you kind of break through that wall of like seeing everything, like, okay, like I can eat this and use this for this and like get this flavor profile from this, it's like you can't really go back once you've like opened Pandora's box, you know?
Truly, yeah.
How'd that how did that change like your whole like chef game?
Man, like I don't know. Like I've kind of always like looked at it from the standpoint of like, okay, if like I know enough about this stuff and I'm able to have access to this stuff, like my goal should be to like expose other people to it. So what I've always like really tried to do as much as possible is like work with like local restaurants or people at farmers markets and stuff like that, and just like forage mulberries for, you know, somebody that wants to do a hand pie, or forage mulberries for somebody that wants to like make a mulberry jam and put on a biscuit, or, you know, forage persimmons so somebody could do a pear and persimmon hand pie, you know, stuff like that, and just try to make it attainable and like something that's accessible to people at a lower price point. Because I could easily just be like, let me forage all this stuff and I'm gonna, you know, do dinners for $200 a pop, and then it limits the accessibility of these already like kind of like non-mainstream foods. So I don't know, my goal has just always been to like expose as many people as possible this stuff through avenues like that, and through food, and through being a chef, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, I think that's a common denominator that a lot of us in the foraging or plant love spectrum really agree on, and think that, I mean, and then, you know, there's a variety, there's a whole world of people, and therefore we need a whole world of different strategies to get to these people's hearts and attention, you know. And for me, and I think probably a solid majority, maybe a very big chunk of the pie chart of peoples is our food motivated, and that, like, right, you know, using that language of food and flavor and the stories that the ingredients tell is you know, a real surefire way to transfer that information to other people.
Yeah, I think that's really well put.
I agree. Yeah. And it's also like, you know, think of it from the standpoint of this too. It's like, you know, if I'm able to get something like mulberries to somebody who's selling something at the farmer's market or their restaurant or whatever, and it's like a, you know, $10 or less item, or like $15, let's say, like, what if, say, somebody like you takes their like kid, and like their kids never experienced this stuff, they just ate like commodity fruits and vegetables from the grocery store, and they're experiencing mulberries for the first time at like 4 or 5 or something. Like, for me, I didn't experience that until like, you know, 25, and it's like that's ultimately how we like get another generation of people to like start foraging and start, like, you know, start that knowledge and sharing of knowledge at an earlier age and at an earlier stage in life, to like hopefully grow the community of like foraging people in general.
Yeah, people like people that give a shit, you know, like about the environment and about being outside and about all the cool shit you can find there. And yeah
100%.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for... I totally lost my train of thought.
There's something to be said about losing your train of thought, if you think about it. Your mind was just going for a little stroll, appreciating all the things inside your head. Boy. It's fine. It happens to the best of us.
What I was going to say was that I think it's... That's part of the reason why I appreciate, and I think it's really important to tell stories that aren't so poetic necessarily about, like, you know, how'd you get started foraging? You know, a lot of people, it isn't for, you know, everybody wants to have that, like, oh, we've always done it my whole life. You know, my family, my father taught me and his father taught him.
My grandfather was a squirrel.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, been doing it forever. Yeah.
You want that, like, kind of romantic story. And the fact is, you know, it's totally okay, and I think it's really awesome when people are brought to this passion later on in life, like me, like you, and how far you can come as an adult. You know, people, you know, old dogs can't learn new tricks, yada yada. It's like, well, I learn all sorts of new tricks, and I see you learning new tricks too. I love to see it, and I think that in and of itself is its own kind of inspiration for a certain kind of people too.
Yeah, 100%. I definitely agree with that. I always like kind of look back and I'm just like, you know, all this stuff used to be like common knowledge, and it's just kind of wild that, you know, over time it's just become less and less common and less known about. And I mean, like, you know, obviously that started with Indians and Native Americans and all that stuff. So it's been a long time in the making, but it's just, it's weird to think of a world where, like, if it was common knowledge again, you know, what would things be like?
Yeah. A lot better.
Yeah.
So you reference mulberries a lot. I know that's a pretty important fruit and plant to you. Is that the first thing you think you remember experiencing as a foraged plant, or is there something else?
So, I mean, if you want to count it, I feel like the first thing I ever foraged was sumac, but it was like off the side of a road. So I don't know if I would count that as like my first foraging experience, but actually, weirdly enough, so Chef Rob Connolly had just moved to St. Louis from New Mexico, and I knew he was like super into foraging, and that was like around the time I was kind of like getting interested, and I just kept like hitting him up on Instagram and bugging him and if he would, like, you know, take me out to forage with him and like kind of teach me some stuff. And we did. We went to a spot, and kind of like the very first thing he like pointed out to me was chickweed. And I just, like, you know, reached down, picked it up and ate it. And that was like my first experience, really, of foraging for real, I would say. So, yeah.
Nice. Chickweed's a good one.
Yeah. Some of that popped up in my front yard.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks,
brag. Yeah.
Thanks, birds. You know.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny how, like, I mean, not specifically chickweed, but like the super humble things that are out there that are just so good. Like, I talked to this about, or I talk with this, or I talk to my buddy about this, like, quite often, about like how good wood sorrel is, and just,
oh yeah,
it's so yeah, good. Like, it's just, I don't know. I just want to eat it all the time. Every time I see it.
Yeah. It's like a feral crave that I have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything you're looking forward to, especially this year, that you like, you learned about and haven't tried yet, or just something you're like, I can't wait to see my old friend again? Better not be mulberries.
Yeah, no more mulberries. Well, you're cut off.
I mean, every year I'm always looking forward to like mulberries, chanterelles, pawpaws, persimmons. I mean, those are like my four like things that I really tend to like hit hard and like am able to find like a decent amount of too.
Yeah, I saw like a shitload of persimmons on your Instagram. I was like, this guy has a couple trees that he knows about.
Yeah. Like, I usually process, like, 200 pounds a year.
Oh, shit. What?
Yeah.
That's unreal. What do you do? What's your favorite thing to do with a persimmon?
Awesome. I have this recipe for persimmon bread. It was actually published by, like, a local, like, food website/magazine here in St. Louis, and it's, the link for it is in my bio if anybody out there wants to make it, but it's just using processed persimmon pulp, which that's pretty much what I do with it, is I just break the persimmons down and into pulp and just freeze it as I get it, because there's just not really any way I can keep up with it, because once they start dropping, it's just kind of like, if you're not there, then the deers are going to eat them. So
What is your, or do you have like a really good way to get the pulp from persimmon? Because that's quite a chore.
You're going to probably laugh, but like the way I've been doing it from the beginning is I'll just literally take like a sieve, like a handheld sieve with just like a handle on it that you would use to strain like macaroni and cheese, basically, and take like a pint glass, like the bottom of a pint glass, and I'll take all the tops off and like have a bucket of tops, and I'll just fill the sieve with maybe like 10 or 15 and just mash them through the sieve. Whoa. And then I'll push it through with a rubber spatula, and then I'll like scoop that out and have like the seeds and guts in a separate bucket.
Sure.
And I'll just like keep going, and then once I get through all the whole fruit, I'll go back through with like the seedy guts and kind of pass it through one more time.
Nice.
That is a lot of work. Freaking work.
Yeah.
Dude, I deseeded all the stuff for our hot sauce. I deseeded that all by hand.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
Oh my god.
It was awful. It's like
I used a food mill to process my pawpaw, to process my persimmon. And honestly, that's not that much better.
It's really not, because I tried that too.
Yeah, I mean, I use that same method for processing pawpaws too, actually. Yeah.
The same sieve method?
Yeah, and I mean, with persimmons too, I guess this would be a good thing to know. I don't worry about the skins either. I just like take
me
the
too.
Tops off. Yeah. And put the whole fruit in there and just mash it through.
What do you do with all the seeds and the tops? Do you like make? What do you do with them? Do you just toss them out?
Yeah, I just toss them out. I have given them to a couple people locally to like try and plant them on like their land and stuff like that. But I don't know. That's kind of like few and far between, and the amount of seeds from like that many persimmons is
staggering. I'm sure.
Yeah, they're just a lot.
Yeah,
yeah, like, they can have anywhere between like 3 to 8 seeds in them. Like,
I made vinegar with mine last year, like the the slightly pulpy seeds, you know.
Yeah. I have thought about doing stuff like that. I don't know. I definitely. There's not a point where I could use probably all of them. So if you guys ever want some and you're around during persimmon season, I got you.
Nice.
You heard that, listeners.
Yeah, can't take it back now. It's the rules.
So right now you got your hands in a lot of fires. I didn't want to talk too much about it. This is a foraging podcast, but of course we'd like to highlight some of the like really cool stuff you're doing in the kitchen. You have experience with a James Beard award-winning chef, and doing baking for them. And actually one thing you brought up was actually you said you opened up, helping start a chapter of Ben's Friends in St. Louis. It's just happenstance that your name is Ben, right?
Yeah. It actually has nothing to do with me. So I've got a lot going on in terms of like just, you know, working like 60 hours a week right now between a company called Bijou Chocolates, where I make chocolate, and then a bakery called Damn Fine Hand Pies. We just started a chapter here in St. Louis called it's bensfriendshope.com is their website, but it's for people in the industry struggling from like substance abuse and addiction. It's just a weekly meeting that we started on Mondays at 10 a.m. at a local restaurant. called Olive and Oak. And yeah, kind of like an offshoot of that, to help raise money for that organization is a pop-up my friend Max and I started called Temperance Kitchen. We're just, for right now, we've been doing 7-course tasting menus and just donating all the proceeds from that to Ben's Friends.
That's badass, man.
Wow.
I love that.
Yeah,
you guys are fucking great.
Well, I think that's such a I've really enjoyed what I've been seeing on your Instagram. Just a lot of the statements that you've made about just the culture in the kitchen. And I work as a I work in the beer service industry. And so, you know, that reward of, you know, you get your shift at the end of the day, that. And just kind of the perspective you put on it, I think, is really important for a lot more people to kind of step back and think about and observe. And yeah, I'm so glad that there's organizations like this around for people. Yeah.
Sigh.
What's wrong, buddy?
Well, I just realized this mushroom supplement I bought isn't actually made with mushrooms. It's made with something called myceliated grain?
Myceliated grain?
Oh, no!
I'm sorry to tell you, buddy, but myceliated grain is a sure sign of a poor quality mushroom supplement.
Well, dang. I wanted mushrooms, not brown rice. What should I do?
Well, you should support a small batch producer from right here in the Midwest. Keweenaw Apothecary.
Keweenaw Apothecary? Tell me more.
Keweenaw Apothecary specializes in high-quality mushroom extracts from Michigan, and they always use real mushrooms, never, never, never myceliated grain.
That sounds like exactly what I've been looking for. Where can I order?
Well, you can find them at keweenawapothecary.etsy.com. That's K-E-W-E-E-N-A-W, apothecary.etsy.com. Be sure to read their many excellent reviews.
Thanks, buddy. I don't want no low-quality mushroom products from a factory. I want Keweenaw Apothecary.
Wowie wow! Wowie wow! We've got a new hot sauce for you.
It's so delicious.
It's spicy.
It's spicier for sure.
Spicier. It's called Harvest Moon, made with ghost peppers, American persimmons,
and spice bush berry.
It's gonna be great. We also have t-shirts available. Brand new t-shirts.
The best t-shirts, I think.
Baseball tees.
Scrumpers United.
If you've collected apples, if you've collected fruit, you're
welcome to the club.
Welcome to a club. You're a scrumper. So check out our merch store, wildedibleworldpod.myshopify.com. Wowie wow!
Yeah, I really think it's important. I've had my own personal struggles. Like all I've ever done in my life for work has been working in a kitchen. You know, I've been doing it since I was 15, and you know, from the get go, you know, drugs and alcohol and substance abuse like were involved with that from the beginning. I mean, like, I was 15 working at a bar and grill in Godfrey, Illinois, and they were like smoking cigarettes in the prep kitchen, and people were like high on the clock, and like, I don't know, like, you know, it's just crazy that it's kind of the culture of the industry, and it's not any kind of way to live, and it's also not a way to like handle your issues, you know. And
I have a lot of food service experience, and it's definitely it was a lot of it revolved around, I mean, the hours alone, you know, what the mm-hmm. hell else is there to do at, you know, 1 or 2 a.m. when you get out of work, you mm-hmm. know. And I think that you make a good point, and I think that it is great that you're shining a light somewhere that has been notoriously dark, you know?
Yeah.
And and I think that if people were to just think about that, think about the steps that they're taking now, and think about what it would take to maybe curb some of that energy and some of that focus, either back into their restaurant, back into their career, or even just like something else you could do that could be more constructive than you know, closing down that 3 a.m. bar. You know?
Yeah. And I think and on the other side of that coin, you say something more constructive. It was going to sound like kind of a broken record, that is like, well, there's so many destructive things in the service industry, in the way that it's built, in the way that it's run, in the way that the employees and the workers have to self-medicate in some ways or some. And just like what we were just talking about with the culture around it, too. I mean, there's just... Not to mention, I mean, the whole point of this show, too, is to talk about these alternative, these vegetables, these amazing nutritious foods that don't have a scene in the culinary, vision, really, right now at all. And that whole food system that it is focused on is also destructive, you know? It's like the whole thing needs to be reexamined.
Yeah, and what's funny, too, if you think about it, is like if all these people would... quit drinking and doing drugs and start forging, maybe we could turn it around.
Right? No, absolutely. Let's, I mean, for real though, I mean, that many people made more healthful decisions like that and literally went out and touched grass. Like, kids say that, but it's a real thing.
No, 100%. I, you know, I really noticed that too, because like when I got into foraging, I haven't been sober the entire time that I've been foraging either. And, you know, I've really kind of noticed that it's just like, I don't know, after a long week of working and just kind of grinding away, you know, there's nothing really better than just going out and like getting lost in the woods, just like looking for stuff. Like, it sounds so simple and it sounds like everyone would be doing it, but I don't know, that's kind of one of my key outlets for sure, has been foraging. And I'm definitely glad that I found it, you know, when I did.
Yeah, seriously. And I hope it's a good message for a lot of other people out there that aren't really sure. Or And I think I'm going to take a step back, actually. I think what you said about like just the sheer fact of going outside into nature is a really healing act. And it's not just, I don't know, it's not just going outside either. Because so many people are like, well, I got to go outside. I know I got to do this walk and blah, 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 blah. You got the monkey brain on, full 6-cylinder engine. It's the full throttle. And you're just like trying to get through the walk so you can get back home or whatever. And I think a really key component of being outside is something that you said, which is like really just kind of notice the stuff that you're around and take it slow, really breathe, really look around you. It doesn't have to be a big, like, you know, meditative hippie experience or coming of an age or whatever. It really is just like, just slow down a little, just take it easy.
Yeah.
And you're going to see a lot more stuff when you do that, too.
Definitely.
I mean, I walk in, I go all of the same places that everybody else does, and people are like, how do you find all this stuff? It's like, well, I move slower, and I go further than everybody else, and I'm out there longer than everybody else. So.
And you're taking your time rather than just, like, buzzing through, you know?
Exactly, yeah. I'm not trying to cover as much ground as possible. I'm trying to cover that ground as efficiently as effectively as possible. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I it's kind of funny too, because I've noticed, especially with like mushroom hunting specifically, and like even more specific than that, morels, that, you know, since I have been sober and like been out looking, I've noticed like I have the ability to have more patience and like actually take the time to like look, because like, you know, very guiltily, I used to be one of those people. I just like, you know, would stay on the trail. I would be out there, you know, I'd smoke some weed before I go out and just be high out there, just buzzing through the trails, like just walking by everything, expecting morels to just like pop out in front of me and just be like, hi, I'm right here. But, you know, like, it doesn't work that way. You really have to, like, slow down and be present. And, you know, and I think that's important. I think in a lot of ways, like, I don't know, foraging will humble you like that and bring you kind of back down to earth. And in a world that's so, like, fast paced and nonstop, like, you really need that in your life. You need some type of outlet where you can just, like, slow down.
Yeah. And something to also teach you, or, you know, to help share the lessons that we learn in other places too, to give yourself that grace and patience and the slowness. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, that you made a good point by saying that you used to be like somebody that sticks to the trail, because yeah, you can find mushrooms if you stick to the trail, but I guarantee that if you look around three quarters of a fucking tree, that hen of the woods is going to be in that last quarter, you know. Yeah. It's like you have to be very purposeful. Like, nope, mm-hmm. I know you saw most of that tree. You didn't see all of it. Mm-hmm. You're missing that damn mushroom.
Yeah, it's all just about intention, you know what I mean?
It's like,
you know, not just going out and being willy-nilly about it, really, you know, taking the time to, you know, put energy into it and not just kind of neglect it, you know what I mean? And
the longer you look, the more you'll see, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Do you have any, like, white whale ingredient, something that you've always wanted to try or taste but don't have in the St. Louis area?
Man, I have never found ramps. I know you guys are, like, silly with them up there, aren't you? But,
never?
Never?
No, never found them. I mean, we have access to them, like, through distributors and stuff up here or down here, but that's about it. And I mean, another one, like, mushroom wise, I've never found lion's mane. I actually found my first lobster mushroom last fall, which was nice. Cool.
What'd you think? Was it good?
The lobster?
Yeah.
It was like borderline, so I ended up just drying it and throwing it in a dashi. So, like,
nice.
I didn't really get to taste
get the
just
full
the lobster alone.
Okay. But, yeah. No, I think that's a great use of it. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, shoot. Dang, Ben. Next springtime, I think you should come visit the Chicago area, maybe, and we'll get you your white whale.
Hell yeah.
Sure. I would totally be down for that. I see all these pictures and stuff of people, like, all the time posting these massive, like, patches of them. I'm just like, oh my God, I don't even know what I would do. And the funny thing is too, is, like, you know, I honestly kind of prefer the flavor of spring onions to ramps.
Sure. Yeah.
So I don't know. For me, I'm just kind of like, you know, you guys can have your ramps at $25 a pound. I'm gonna use these spring onions as the poor man's ramp, you know?
Truly, yeah. I'm gonna use this plant that's generally regarded as a noxious weed in half the United States. And it's like the most delicious plant ever.
Yeah, I know. Like, I don't know why it had to be ramps. Like, it's insane to me that they're $25 a pound now. And
insane.
They're not that
so crazy.
They're not even that good. I mean, they're good. They're great. They're interesting and complex, but, like, not even, I don't know. Yeah. Part of me thinks it's, like, maybe the shape. Maybe it's voluptuous,
man.
You know,
yeah,
it's got, like, that
nice,
hourglass shape to it or something.
You get a nice char on a ramp leaf.
I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying, like, I agree with Ben that it's,
I
like,
think it's,
why is it ramps?
I think it's impactful.
Okay.
I think one of my buddies, Jimmy in the city, he's Jimmy Bernard. Shout out Jimmy Bernard. He's a chef. He works at what is that damn place called?
Not Alinea.
No, like the Publican, I think.
Oh man,
and,
so good.
Yeah, and he he does like little pop-ups and stuff like that, and he did this fucking ramen, and I got a bunch of ramps for him, and that's what he did. He like grilled over like crazy high heat, so you got grill marks on the ramp, and he put like one single leaf, like it just, it was beautifully plated, and it just, that that grilled ramp flavor just permeated into the bowl of ramen, and it was wonderful.
I want that so bad.
I know. It's really good. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. It's kind of like, you know, a lot of ramen places you go, they'll put like a little sheet of nori in there, and I kind of get that, that he was kind of maybe riffing on that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Maybe last but not least, unless Steve has anything else, or if you wanted to mention anything else that we haven't talked about yet, do you have any, like, chef inspirations or people who inspire you in the foraging realm or in the kitchen that you'd like to mention?
I don't know. I mean, I definitely look up to some people here locally in St. Louis. You know, there's Ryan with Farm Spirit. He's doing a lot of cool things out there. They're out of DeSoto, and there's they're in a farm called Such and Such Farm, and they're raising
that's pretty fucking cool. That's pretty good.
They're raising pigs out there, goats, and just kind of like growing their own produce, and they do dinners like once a week, probably like 6 months out of the year, and they're using all produce and like meat from like poultry and pigs and goat's milk and all that kind of stuff from the farm, and they're having the dinners in a barn on the farm, and it's just like, oh, it's super cool to think about. And you know, I've kind of always had this desire to go back to my hometown and open my own thing one of these days, and I hope to the extent like of what they're doing, I'm able to make an impact like that, because they're an hour out of the city and they've got, you know, 100 people from St. Louis and all over driving down there once a week to come eat food out of a barn, you know, like
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So if you were, you said you wanted to, you would like to do something like that for yourself, what would that kind of dining experience look like ideally?
So I've had a lot of experience with like wood-fired pizzas and stuff like that. So I've always had like this vision in my mind of like opening like a cafe with like two garage doors in the front that you could open and have like some seating outside and just have some like open air and do like sourdough bread baked in the morning from like the residual heat of the oven, and then have like pastries and coffee and do like wood-fired pizzas in the evening, and then like monthly pop-up dinners. I don't know, that's kind of the dream to do in Alton, where I grew up at some point. But yeah, we'll see.
That sounds awesome, dude. That's really inspiring. I hope that dream comes true for you. And I also hope it comes true for me, because I want to go eat there. I used to drive through Alto all the time, actually, on my way from my hometown. I grew up in Jacksonville, Illinois. So St. Louis was about 2.5 hours compared to Chicago, which was like 4 hours. So we'd always end up on the other side of the Mississippi. So you grew up in Alto, Illinois?
Yeah, Alton, Illinois.
Alton.
I
knew that.
Yeah. But were you, do you go back to Jacksonville at all?
Oh yeah, all the time. My wife's family lives there.
Nice. Is Jacksonville like super stoked that there's a Portillo's there now?
How do you know this? Yes.
Dude, I love Portillo's. It's so good.
Who doesn't? Hell yeah.
Just pulled a deep cut from my wife's neighborhood. That's funny.
That's super funny.
Well, cool.
Well, also I know because I have driven I have driven there from St. Louis because that's the closest one to here.
No.
Yeah, there's not one near here. That's the closest one is like up near like Jacksonville, Springfield area.
Holy crap. Well, next time you got a craving, you say the word. I'll try to meet you halfway or something.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Well, also, Portillo's, what's up? What's up with this location in St.
Yeah,
Louis?
Yeah, come on, Portillo's.
Yeah, that's seriously, who's got the lockdown on the hot dog scene?
Yeah, there's like one in Texas. Like, how the fuck is there not one in St. Louis?
Yeah, you know?
There's one in Florida.
Yeah, Florida, like, yeah, yeah.
If Florida has one, St. Louis should have one.
Seriously. Yeah, we'll get some chili cheese dogs and then throw some flowers on it or something and call it a foraged meal.
Hell yeah.
Ben, is there anything else you wanna mention? Is there anything we missed that you wanna talk about?
I don't think so. I appreciate you guys having me on and we'll definitely have to like actually get together at some point and go out and forage or
hell yeah, dude.
Grab
would love
lunch
that.
Or whatever, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, shoot, we got our dreams aimed high. So I don't know, man, maybe someday in the next couple of years, we're celebrating our second year as a podcast coming up pretty soon. So maybe in the third year or something like that, we could do a collaborative dinner or something like that. Go down to St. Louis and hang out or something. I don't know. Steve wants to take the show on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, that would be awesome. And I also haven't been to Chicago in like 5 years. So I'm slacking. I love Chicago.
Yeah, I saw that pastry post where you went to like a shitload of. You basically did a bread crawl, you know.
Dude, there's so many good places to eat in Chicago. I would be the poorest person in the world if I lived there.
I talk about that all the time. Yeah, it's hard to keep a reasonable perspective whenever you live near Chicago, so close to Chicago like we do, mm-hmm. and to not be like. I don't know. It's hard to realize that Mexican food isn't this good everywhere. Pizza isn't this good
food
everywhere.
In general,
Italian isn't this good everywhere. Yeah. Everything isn't this good everywhere. We're really so spoiled up here.
Yeah.
The foraging.
Well, yeah, I mean, like honestly, like I find it hard to keep up with what St. Louis has going on sometimes. It's like I can't imagine what it's like trying to keep up with the new restaurants in Chicago. Like. Your list of places you want to go has just got to be like impossible at this point, right?
Basically. You
know? I mean, I wish I was a little bit more knowledgeable on the kitchens. I'm kind of ignorant, actually. I don't really know like the hot cool places. That was dumb. Hot cool.
Well, if you haven't been to Daisy's at all, check that place out.
All right, I'm writing it down right now. What do they specialize in?
Well, last time I was up there, it was like kind of like COVID times. So I think they were just doing like sandwiches to go and stuff, but they have like pastas and all types of stuff. But
nice.
I can only say that if a sit down restaurant was doing to go sandwiches and they were as good as they were from that place, like, everything else has got to be insanely good.
Sure. Yeah, I buy it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks for the recommendation, Ben. It's been really awesome talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And I hope to see you guys in real life soon.
Heck yeah, man.
Count on it. We'll make it happen. Good luck with the Temperance Kitchen pop-up. Really excited about that. I look forward to seeing what else you got going on, man. It's really cool to watch your journey.
Thank you. I appreciate that a lot. And super excited to see what you guys do, where the podcast goes. If it goes on the road, that would be awesome.
we'll keep you on the map in the docket for places to stop by if we get the van life going.
Antiques Roadshow.
There we go. The Antiques Foraging Show. We're the antiques.
I love it.
Anyway, Ben, you take it easy. Be well.
Elvita Sane.
Yeah. Yeah, see you.
See you guys.
Ben Grant.
That was so, that was like, I don't know, that was almost an hour, and it felt like...
Yeah, about 40 minutes.
I love that guy, man.
He's so cool. Yeah, he's been really patient with us, patient with me, because I've had to reschedule a couple of times just due to tech issues or scheduling mishaps on my part, but super patient, super awesome, super knowledgeable.
Yeah, no, I definitely want to get down there and to hang out with him.
Yeah, we'll definitely do it, do some... together, Ben Grant, Fourplex Dining, at Fourplex Dining on Instagram. I'm kind of bummed he's not doing the bread sale or what it was, the bake sale.
Was that pretty cool?
I wasn't
aware.
Well, like he said, it was this whole like coping with COVID type deal, The kitchen's shut down, and he's a career kitchen guy, and so he had to come up with something to pay the bills.
Yeah.
And so he was coming up with these whole menus of like different kombuchas, different breads, cookies, hand pies. And the man's a professional baker.
Yeah, his shit's incredible.
Super tight. Yeah. Super tight. So I guess I hadn't heard about it in a while, but I'm only 5-6 months out of the news.
Yeah.
Apparently he stopped doing that in November, I guess. But really cool. Really, really proud of him. Really proud of him. We've been chatting for a couple years, and it's really cool to see where how far he's gone and all the interesting stuff that he makes with the ingredients that we love. So
yeah,
definitely follow him, check him out, support his stuff down in St. Louis. Should you all be on that side of the Mississippi? And
thanks for being the best.
Thanks for being the best listeners ever. Reach out, say hi, let us know if you want to be on the show. Let us know if you want to talk to us. Otherwise, you can write us a review and give us 5 stars. And that costs you absolutely nothing and helps the show get better and better and better and do cooler and cooler stuff and maybe be shown to other cool people. Anyway,
I'll see you later, guys. Thank you so much for listening to the show. This has been Sausage Talk.
Sausage Talk. Damn it, I forgot about that.
What?
Sausage Talk.
What about it?
That's like a thing.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's fuck.
You mean Sausage that? Party?
No. I don't know. Maybe I'm making that up. Anyway, we gotta go.
The Sausage Factory? Sausage chat from the Sausage Factory?
Anyway. Okay, thanks for listening to my German accent, you guys.
Goodbye.
Bye.